Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is painter Erica Pollock. Pollock is a graduate of the Academy of Art University in San Francisco. Her work has been seen in many local, regional, and national art spaces and galleries, including the Main Street Gallery in Groton, New York, Blink Gallery in Andes, New York, and Charlton House in Montgomery, Alabama. She has a new solo show that opens soon at the State of the Art Gallery in Ithaca. And welcome to the show, Erica.
Thank you, Tish. It's my pleasure to be here.
Great. Now, you said in your biography that you ignored your yearning to paint until you were a sophomore in college. Tell us why.
Throughout high school, I'd really been pushed into the academics. You know, my father's in Cornell, and Ithaca High School had a really strong science and math program, and my brother, who was 2 years ahead of me, had gone that route, did very well, and I found it very interesting, so I decided to do that. I also felt that, you know, art was something that you're born with, this talent. And if you didn't have it when you started out, and by the time you were 10 or 12, if you couldn't draw, there was no way you're going to pick it up.
Hmm.
So I kind of pushed it aside and always admired my friends who could draw, really loved what they did, and really secretly really wanted to learn how to do that. But I didn't feel like I could do it at that point.
But you had tried, right? I mean, did you try to draw? Did you try to paint and decide you just weren't good?
A little bit on my own, actually. Towards the end of high school, I kind of had a sketchbook, and I would start drawing things, copying things which I saw, taking random objects and trying to develop them. And I actually never showed this sketchbook to anybody. You know, it was kind of my secret journal. Until, actually, I got to college, and my roommate, she asked me what I was doing one day, and I showed her what I was doing, and they just loved it, and she brought some more friends over to see what I was doing, and I was like, you know, I really want to do art. So I ended up taking a class at Cornell, a painting class, introductory painting class.
And that was for a summer, right?
It was a summer semester, which was wonderful because you met every day in the morning for a couple hours, and we would just paint and paint and paint, and I would end up going back to class after class and just going painting for another couple hours. I just loved it. It was a different way of challenging myself. It wasn't this learning from the book, reading things, memorizing, applying things. It was a physical type of application.
Mm-hmm.
I fell in love with it. I really did. And at the end of the class, I did well in the class, so I asked my teacher if she thought potentially I had any possibility of ever making it as an artist. She was this charming old lady, and she's like, oh, of course, go for it, you know. I ended up taking a break from Cornell. I spent some time just working and trying to think about where I wanted to go in my life. And then out of the blue, I decided I would go to art school. And I told my parents that. I said, I'm dropping out of Cornell. I'm going to go to San Francisco, go to art school.
That's a huge leap, Erica. That is amazing. That is very brave.
It was, I think I really shocked my family. They really did not believe that this was going to last. I thought it was some little whim of mine. So they did not entertain it. They said, okay, you know, if you're going to do this, it's going to be all on your own. You're going to go do it. We're not going to support you. But in the end, if it turns out that this really is what you really feel strongly about, this, we'll support you then, but you've got to prove it to us that this is where you want to be.
Did you show them some of the work that you were doing so that they could see that you were serious?
Yeah, they had seen some of my paintings from this class I took, and they liked it. But they also know that being an artist is a rather difficult job to have, and it's not one where you make money right off the bat. In fact, a lot of artists end up struggling for many years till they can find that niche, their voice, you know, where they are.
Mm-hmm.
So
you know, you said in your biography that painting was a new way for you to communicate, that you were kind of a introspective person, and this was a new way for you to discover how to communicate. Talk to us a little bit more about that. What was it that you were communicating through painting?
Well, I think all my paintings, I have to be honest, I do them for myself to begin with. And I look at the world, and I'm actually a fairly quiet person. I love watching people and trying to understand the dynamics of relationships, you know, who we are, why we're here, all this stuff. And when I go back to my studio and I'm painting, it really is a way for me to kind of explore these thoughts. And maybe they don't hit you over the head, but when you look at my paintings, you don't see these. But that's how I am inside looking at my work. I say, let's explore this relationship of living in the city and feeling like you have no community, and what's that like, and how do I... And I bring what's within inside me, and I kind of work through my own personal battles when I am painting.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes, then the paintings become something else.
Mm-hmm. They become your voice, perhaps.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And when you went to art school, you were able to study all kinds of things, like, you know, drawing, landscapes, and almost everything, composition. Did this open you up to different mediums? Did you choose painting, or did it choose you?
I have to say it chose me. I did focus myself as a painting major for a while. For about a year I was a painting major until I realized that I really liked sculpture. So I ended up switching to a sculpture major and spent another couple of years doing that. And then I'd go back and forth taking some painting classes on the side. I loved painting. I loved drawing. But I really love sculpture. I love that physicality of it, putting my hands.
What kind of mediums were you using?
I was using mostly clay. Uh-huh. And then we would cast things. But it was, most of the stuff started out with water-based clay. It had a lot of... not only are you sculpting, but you're working with making molds and finishing. It was just never ending. You could always work on something else. If you got tired of sculpting, you could just jump in to something else and work. And you felt good at the end of the day.
You like the physical aspect of it,
oh,
it looks
yeah.
like. Your hands are moving.
When I was finishing up school, I had one semester left. I found out I was pregnant. And this was when I had bronze casting, some other class to take, and it just was not going to work out. I could not do this when I was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up finishing up as a painting major and switching back, and I had enough. I worked with the directors, so they were actually going to get a degree in painting. And then when I finally graduated, I found myself back here in Ithaca. And the practicality of it was that painting is so much easier to store. So much easier. You can do it in a little room. You don't need a big space. If you need to ship anything, it is so much cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
So that's actually kind of when I started really getting into painting.
Uh-huh.
And I don't want to say I didn't enjoy it as much. I really did like painting, but I never had really sat myself down and really spent a long time altogether just developing work until I moved back to Ithaca.
But your stuff is fascinating. Tell us a little bit about your paintings. You call your style contemporary realistic. Tell us what that means.
That's a term that's coming out now. I would say if you look at a painting and it's representational, you see an object, it looks like the object. It's more of a traditional bent. You know, at one time people actually learned how to, create realistic looking objects, create human forms. So that's where it came out from. But traditional is kind of now a negative turn, and realistic, it has this negative connotation.
Well, I think a lot of people think in terms of photographs. Are you just copying photographs?
Oh, yeah.
But your realistic stuff obviously has an essence of you in it. It's almost watercolory or ghost-like. It's fascinating.
Well, so that's where I think there's a huge group of artists now who are doing this realistic type art, but it's not the traditional stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It has more contemporary bend. Either the subject matter they're approaching is contemporary, as it has to deal with today's society, or they're pushing boundaries that have never really been pushed and wouldn't have been pushed, 200 years ago in the subject matter, the ways things are composed. So that's where I think contemporary representational, the term, comes from.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now your paintings do deal with the urban environment, and you talk in your biography about the isolationism and, the lack of connection that you found, for instance, when you were living in the city. Is that you, or was that the city? And were your paintings ways to bring that connectedness together?
I think it's both of us, or both aspects. I found it a lot in the city. It was really hard for me to find my community. And, I mean, there's so many people in the world, and you pass these people on the street all the time. You go into coffee shops, and you still never seem like you actually can greet somebody, and you get to know them. There's this very isolated sense. You know, you do have your few friends that you follow, but I always felt that I was always being judged as by outward appearances, whatever that could be. If I went into a nicer place, you know, they would look at me, dress my student jeans and sweatshirt, and they they would ignore me, and it was very hard. And then other times, you know, people would just look at me like, oh, it's a young, attractive woman on the street, you know, and it really started to unsettle me about how people were judging each other without actually ever getting to know somebody. Mm-hmm. And so in part of my paintings, I was trying to address this and look at, bring kind of an awareness to how it is that we look at people. Mm-hmm.
It looks like you are trying to bring people into focus, but you're not often showing their faces. Mm. So that's the isolation that you're trying to portray.
That is, yeah. But in some times, I remove their faces because if you had a face in a photograph or a painting, that's immediately where your eyes travel to. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, you're looking at the person and you're trying to make judgments about them and you're trying to figure out who they are, but on the streets and stuff, you actually don't, half the time, you don't even look at the person's face. And so by removing their face, I'm actually forcing somebody to focus on the body. And sometimes by focusing on the body, you're actually creating a sense that the bodies are not really the person. Hmm. Or that we are, you know, there's something that holds us all together. Mm-hmm.
In some ways, your paintings also show how much we have in common. Hmm. You know, I mean, these people do not look like aliens, in other words. So you're trying to show the humanity in some ways, it seems to me. Did living in the city change you?
Oh, yeah, it really did. And I don't know if it was so much about living in the city as it was just finally being really on my own and trying to figure out who I was. I think the city is a very different dynamic. You know, it's everyone's, I kind of, every time I picture a city, I think of like a ant farm, you know, all these people scurrying around, going to places.
Constant movement.
Oh, yeah. Mm. And everyone's got their own direction. They know exactly where they're doing. And it was kind of eye-opening to see something that's that big, that really has so much energy and so much movement. And yet so cohesive, and everything flows, and everything fits, and there's a place for everything.
Did you ever feel like all this motion was going nowhere? I mean, seriously.
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes I'm like, wow, is this really, you see people working so hard, and you know, that's all that it is to them, is work and money, and you start to think, is this really what life is all about? You know, or are we completely missing the point? Uh-huh. And sometimes I think we do miss the point.
And then so your paintings were stopping those moments of motion and trying to capture the human beings.
Yeah, and sometimes it was to kind of slow people down. You know, I noticed people would not even look at where they were, what they were, the environment they're surrounding by. So I started painting buses. I started painting, you know, the streets, the cars, you know, just the urban landscapes. Mm-hmm. I noticed that it was beautiful to me. I started to see, when I really slowed down and started looking at this stuff, it was beautiful. Mm-hmm. It wasn't your typical lake and tree landscape, but it was home. It was a place where people lived. It was beautiful. And by then taking that and putting it in front of people, presenting it with them, they started to see the beauty in their surroundings as well.
Mm-hmm. And then that's what's different about painting now, too. The subject matter. No one would be taking street scenes, you know, 100 years ago like this.
Yeah.
So that's in a way that it's kind of modern, contemporary, I suppose. If you're just joining us, my guest is Erica Pollack. She's a painter and an artist. Now, since coming back from Ithaca, it says in your biography that your urban scapes are becoming more close up and you're cropping, and it seems to me you're getting more intimate. To talk to us about, is that because you've come back to a smaller town and sort of found humanity again? Tell us about that.
I think it has to do more with, I've been dwelling on this theme for so long that I'm starting to, I went from kind of an expanded view, I'm just narrowing in closer and closer and closer, and I'm finding that I'm becoming, at first it was actually very difficult for me to confront people and really get close to the issues that I had. And so by having an expanded landscape is one way to slowly kind of, you know, start testing the waters and see where I was with this. And when mm-hmm. that became accepted, I went a little bit further. But being in the smaller town, I am becoming much more comfortable. And I find that being away from a city, I now can look at things much closer than I would have if I was back in the city, where it's mm-hmm. too much to take in, too much stuff to understand, and really.
Yeah, it looks like you've gone from a wide-angle lens to, you know, more of a close-up lens. It's very interesting to see that evolve. Now tell us how you physically approach the paintings. You said that you didn't really start painting the San Francisco scenes until you left San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
Are you painting from photographs, memory? How do you do that?
I do use photographs. So when I came back from San Francisco, actually, I knew that this is where the direction I wanted to go. So I spent a couple of days and I went taking a number of photographs. And many people have this assumption that I paint directly from photographs and that is what I'm painting. It's just a copy of a photograph.
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, I'm taking the photographs and I might piece them together to create the scene that I remember, or a scene that's coherent, either compositionally. And then I also heightened things. So in a lot of these urban landscapes, which I was doing, I was trying to make more of a dramatic light and shadow. Mm-hmm. So you really see the shadows. It comes as almost a big block, you know, of this dark color. Or in reverse, you see the lights become this very noticeable light. And so I'm heightening things. And by doing that, I'm actually kind of controlling what people are looking at. Mm-hmm. What I want them to focus on.
Mm-hmm. You obviously put a lot of emotion into it, too. It's not just a painted copy of a scene. Yeah, it seems to me that you're probably remembering how you were feeling sometimes in the city, the isolationism that we keep going back to.
I think, you know, when I actually paint, most often I do not have any music or any, I paint in silence. It's because then I can listen to myself and actually work out a lot of things in my head. It's not about the painting, but it's about life. That's what I'm thinking about when I'm actually painting. And so then it somehow filters into my painting is these ideas that I'm thinking about and mm-hmm. find their way into the painting itself.
Do you think you're going to be more comfortable having real faces in your paintings? I know you have some, but that certainly hasn't been the focus. Are you going to hone in more on feelings in regard to people and bringing people into focus?
That's possible. I'm actually been thinking about a couple paintings which are going to be very personal, where you're actually going to look at somebody and it's really going to be about that person. So that is one direction I might be taking. I haven't developed it as a body yet.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard sometimes to see where your art is going. You know,
I'm sure it's impossible to see sometimes where your art's going, isn't it?
Yeah. I find, you know, so many artists now they can maybe write something about what the art's going to be, but it's something else to actually create that.
Mm-hmm.
And when you actually get there, you realize, no, this isn't what I want. This is really, I want to do this as something different.
Yeah.
And sometimes I find that after my art is completed, that's when I understand what I was painting about. And it's not until it's finished that I realize that.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a discovery. You know, just like a writer, anybody who's creative, you don't exactly know where you're going. You just, get on the road and hope
the journey,
for the best.
Yeah.
Now, how important has it been for you to show and sell your work? Were you starting out by painting just for yourself, and then you saw the marketplace needed you to prove that you can really sell and so on?
That's a tricky situation. To be honest, I have to paint pictures which I know are going to sell, because as I'm painting full-time, I have to make income. That's what pays the bills. But at the same time, you still want to have your own work that is not directed by the people who are paying for it.
So do you do commissions? Is that what you're saying?
I do some commissions. And to be honest, I do some paintings which I know right off the bat, this is going to sell really easily. It's just a very generic, easy-to-place kind of painting. And I know anybody who is looking to spend a little money would easily buy that.
Mm-hmm.
So I have that work, and then I have my real work. And my real work tends to be a little bit more difficult to place in people's homes. And I do sell that stuff, but, you know, people think about it a lot longer. They really got to respond to it.
Mm-hmm.
That's ideally where my work is going. That's where I like to push my work. But when it comes down to it, I still have to work on these paintings, which are my bread and butter paintings.
Yeah, I talked to the painter Paul McMillan about that, too, and he said the same thing. You do. Because you want people to be able to have beautiful things, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was his philosophy, and be able to afford them. And
yeah.
But his other work is much different.
But I also find sometimes by doing these bread and butter paintings, I don't have to approach it as something which is just going to make money. I'll try and give myself a hurdle to jump over. Like, let me try this composition. Let me do something different with the colors. Let me push this. And so you start to see if you can. You know, usually they're smaller paintings, and you try something out there, and if it works, then you know you can take it to one of these bigger paintings.
Mm-hmm. You can apply it to your other work. Uh-huh. So it's a learning process.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. I was going to ask you about the fact that you were part of the art trail. How was that? You had strangers coming into your studio, coming in and telling you what they thought of your work. How was that?
I actually really enjoy the art trail. It's getting to the point where it's getting a little too busy. I have too many people coming in that I feel like I can't really have too much of a one-on-one conversation with most of them. But the art trail has been very unique in that you find the people who are coming, they're really interested in art. And whether or not they're buying or they're just looking, they just have a genuine interest. And they're very attracted, and a lot of them might be artists, and they will tell you what they think, and not so much what they don't like, but they'll tell you what they like and why they like it. And knowing that has really made me aware of just different styles that I do. Somebody will come and say, I really like this one painting you like. And if I know they like that painting, I also know they like another painting.
Mm-hmm.
Where another group will come in, and they don't like that painting at all, but they like this other painting. For a different reason.
Paintings do speak to people.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's probably the reason. They don't want to sound snobby by saying that, probably. But, paintings do call out to me, at least, and I understand that part of it. Are you concerned about the fact that funding for arts is starting to disappear in the schools? I know you have a child. Are you worried about the next generation in regard to appreciation of art?
I'm not that worried, but I hate to see that the funding's being cut. But I'm finding that there's many little grassroots organizations, many people understand the value of art within the community. And there's many places where art is a focal point. And I see a lot of... I think if any parents really see that their kids are interested in something, there are many avenues that they can take to find that.
So you think there's still a vibrant art scene no matter what?
I mean, I hate to see in the school, because the schools tend to bring it out to everybody. And so if you had no interest in it, all of a sudden you might find you have an interest, which is nice. But at the same time, our world is changing, and now we've got the internet, we've got music at our fingertips, everything. You know, art is all over the place. Mm-hmm. And so I'm finding it's much easier now to bring art into people's homes and to expose people to art, whereas 20 years ago...
It was more segregated. You'd have to go to a museum or you'd have to see it in a classroom.
Or you have to buy the book. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is a more level playing field, I must say. Almost every creative person I've had on has said that.
Hmm.
Yeah, and instead of it being a place where the crazies can, you know, do anything, and it really, I mean, you have to wade through and spend more time to find the real stuff, but it has leveled the playing field and allowed voices to come out that might not have been able to because of elitism and so on in the art world. Yeah. Now, your work was featured on the Ithaca Fine Chocolates art bars. How was that?
Oh, that was very wonderful. Unfortunately, they are now closing the art bar. I just heard about that.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And so the last season was the last season it was open. But Ithaca Fine Chocolates, it was great. You know, I had my own little photo of my work and blurb about my work as well in the chocolate. So people from all over the country and even parts of...
what was so great about that whole idea. Art was going all over the world.
Oh, yeah. I love the idea they had children artists to participate
in. Yes,
Yeah, they had a strong core of these professional artists, but then they also said these children artists are very special, too.
Oh, yeah, I think children's art is fascinating, yeah. It is indeed. Now you are the Ithaca Festival artist. We can announce that here.
Yes, I am.
Did you have to go through a major process? How was that decided?
I was actually approached by the director and asked if I had any interest in this. And, of course, I thought it was a great honor to be asked. Being from Ithaca, I've known the festival all my life. You know, it's been a part of my tradition. And I was very excited when they approached me and asked me if I would come up with something. And, of course, they had the theme, Singing in the Rain. So, you know, I was brainstorming a number of different ideas, but it's been a lot of fun, and I think we're going to have some deal with the theme of music and people dancing and stuff like that.
That's great. I've always been impressed by the art that they choose for that, so I can't wait to see that. We only have about a minute left. You also have a show opening at the State of the Art Gallery starting shortly. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Is it going to be your entire body of work, or is it just going to be your urban paintings? What?
Well, this is going to be more about a lot of people in an urban environment is the main theme. I do have some other, you know, a couple cafe scenes, some more urban landscapes in there, but really been exploring the people on the streets, and that's a lot of the paintings here are going to explore that theme.
Well, that's great. Well, we'll look forward to that. Can you give a website so that people can come and experience your work for themselves?
Sure. www.ericapollock.com.
I recommend that you go there and check out her work. Erica, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Your work is great. Keep it up.
Thank you, Tish. It's been a pleasure being on the show.
Thank you. Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. If you'd like to make a tax-deductible donation in support of the Out of Bounds radio show, please contact our fiscal sponsor, the Arts of the Southern Finger Lakes, at earts.org. That's earts.org. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. We'll be back next week. I'm Tish Perlman.